You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Coming up, a 2008 law gave rape victims more access to emergency contraception. We'll find out why some Wisconsin hospitals didn't follow it.
First, in his opening weeks in the White House, President Trump has made a lot of waves in foreign policy. The TPP trade agreement is out. His plans for a wall with Mexico are starting to take shape, and a travel ban on people from seven countries and a halt to the refugee program have gotten global reaction. Plus, the president has stuck with his positive words for Russian President Vladimir Putin, gotten into tiffs with the leaders of Mexico and Australia, and made NATO leaders nervous as well.
Our next guest says that, taken as a whole, the president's actions look like they're part of an overall comprehensive strategy that would mark a major break with the recent past. And he says that strategy would take the world back to the dangerous era of the 1930s, on the eve of the Second World War.
Jeremy Suri joins us now. He's the Mack Brown Distinguished Chair for Leadership and Global Affairs and Professor of History and Public Affairs at the University of Texas, Austin. He's co-editor of The Power of the Past, History and Statecraft. Jeremy, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Rob.
You wrote just over a week ago, quote, "Trump's executive orders are the blueprints for the most significant shift in American foreign policy since the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor in December 1941. What do you see taking shape?"
Well, since that terrible moment in 1941, the United States has pretty consistently embraced the notion that we have to be part of an international system where we rely on and support allies and where we build institutions and rules for the behavior of countries. We have believed that our power is most useful for us when it is tamed by a system of law and alliances. And I think Donald Trump is very intentionally tearing that apart. He doesn't believe in international law. He doesn't believe in alliances. And he doesn't believe really in long-term international cooperation. It's a very unilateralist, isolationist policy symbolized by walls and threatening rhetoric toward people.
So a world that looks like the 1930s, every country for itself in a way, what would that look like today?
Well, that would be, I think, a terribly dangerous world, and it would be a world where many, many people, particularly those who are in struggling circumstances, will suffer much more, because that kind of world will be a world of higher tariffs and therefore higher cost for things we buy. It'll be a world of less economic growth because it will tear apart many of the markets that produce more jobs and more activity for us, and it will be a world of more conflict, not less, and more conflict for the United States than we've had in the past.
Well, let's put a view on this, and maybe one that inspired a lot of people to support Donald Trump's foreign policy. The things you're talking about, the alliances, they're nice, but the costs of maintaining this world order through these supporting these institutions and our military presence around the world, they've exceeded the benefits to the U.S., and we're picking up too much of the tab. What do you say to that?
I just don't think there's a foundation for that. I know some people perceive it that way, but there's just no foundation for that. In fact, the United States has received a very, very, very good deal from the international expenditures that we have undertaken for the world, especially through international organizations. We have opened markets for our products. We have acquired and consumed more than anyone else. The average American consumes three times as much as the average Chinese citizen does, let alone someone in Africa or elsewhere. And although we have been involved in many conflicts, the average American has not been directly touched by these conflicts. The problems we've had, Rob, have been inequality within our society. We have benefited enormously from these international interactions, but we have not shared the benefits within our society. And I think that's the issue that's getting mistaken for the international issues.
Right. The president's been making the case that trade agreements as they stand have been the cause for inequality, for a particular suffering, especially in certain factories, so-called Rust Belt communities. Do you see some element of truth to that story?
I see the perception of that. But the historian in me, Rob, says that economic change is an ongoing process. And the last thing you want to do is try to stay locked in the past. We have always had, with each generation, changes in the workforce, changes in the skills required. In the 19th century, you didn't need a high school degree to get a good paying job. By the mid-20th century, you needed a high school degree. Today, you need a college degree. This is a natural transformation in the nature of the economy. And the problem we have is that many citizens, and I understand why they're upset, are having trouble keeping up. They're having trouble keeping up not because of economic change. They're having trouble keeping up because we're not doing enough for education. We're not doing enough for retraining of workers. We're not doing enough in our social welfare net to give people a chance to catch up with change. The change is not faster than it's really been. It's our inability to adjust to it. That's the problem.
Talking to Jeremy Suri, historian at the University of Texas, Austin, looking at President Trump's foreign policy in his first couple of weeks in office. I want to get to some specific issues, Jeremy. NATO, President Trump talked today at a military base. He has said he's called NATO obsolete in the past, but today he was saying, you know, NATO's great. We just wanted to pay its fair share. The U.S. is picking up too much of the tab. What do you make of what we've heard from the president on this key alliance?
Well, I'm glad that his rhetoric on NATO is changing. I think he is getting educated, and I think we need to give him credit and his advisors a credit for paying attention to these issues and listening to what our allies say. What I think the president is realizing is that NATO is the most successful alliance in the history of the world. It doesn't mean it's perfect, but it does a crucially important job of providing security and stability for the largest markets that we work with in the world, which are in the Western Hemisphere and Western Europe, and particularly in Western Europe. So this is a very important part of our security and economic stature. Now, the United States definitely does pay more money into NATO, but we are in command as well, and we have always wanted to be in command. And the challenge will be, if we really want our allies to pay more and we want them to get involved more, we will have to share decision-making with them. And one of the problems is that I believe the president has been talking about NATO more as a protection racket rather than as an alliance, where we protect them and they pay us to protect them. That's not the way an alliance works. An alliance works through cooperation. And the deal we've made in the past has been that we have more political authority in NATO than anyone else in return for doing a little more than everyone else. If we want to renegotiate, that's fine, but we're going to have less political authority then.
On a related note, there's been a lot of talk about Donald Trump's attitude toward Russia and Vladimir Putin. Here he is this weekend, the president talking to Bill O'Reilly from Fox News.
Will I get along with him? I have no idea.
He's a killer, though. Putin's a killer.
A lot of killers. We got a lot of killers. Why, you think our country's so innocent?
Been a lot of reaction to that statement in particular, Jeremy, but can you talk about what you're seeing now that he is not the president-elect, but the president in Donald Trump's attitudes toward Putin and Russia?
I think, Rob, here again, we have to give Donald Trump some credit. We do see at least some change in his rhetoric on Putin. He seems far less committed to the personal relationship that he believed he could have, and he seems to recognize that there are areas of tension, at the very least, between the United States and Russia, and certainly areas of tension between Russia and many of our allies in Europe, particularly Germany. So I think there is some shifting here, but we haven't yet, maybe we will soon, but we haven't yet heard from him a real coherent explanation of what our policy should be toward a country that has invaded and annexed an area in Crimea, a country that is responsible for supporting genocide in Syria, and a country that is that hacked our elections and has been undertaking cyber warfare in our own country and is doing this in Europe right now. What we need is less talk from the president about whether he likes Vladimir Putin or not, and more talk about a coherent policy for us to pursue.
And in the Wall Street Journal, there's an article about people being perplexed over a new White House statement committed toward restoring peace on the border between Russia and Ukraine. A lot of people in the article pointing out that the problem isn't on the border, it's within Ukraine itself. Are you seeing a grasp on a complicated issue like that coming from the new administration?
No, not yet. Maybe it's too early. To be fair, these are incredibly complex issues, but there are real facts here. Putin has been, the Russian leadership has been undertaking a low-scale war in Ukraine, sending its forces in different uniforms, sending them under cover into Ukraine, and there are Ukrainian forces that we have traditionally supported, who have been fighting against that and are worried that they're going to lose their support in the United States. Whether we should continue supporting those Ukrainian forces or not is open to debate, but we should have some clarity on this issue. It's not a border issue. This is an issue of Russian warfare in Ukraine, and we have to decide what our position is on that.
Jeremy Suri is with us, history professor at the University of Texas, Austin. He says President Trump's foreign policy is putting the world at risk of a return to the 1930s era on the edge of potential future calamities.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think of President Trump's statements and policies so far on Russia, on trade barriers, or on a wall with Mexico and targeting 7 countries to restrict travel to the U.S.? Do you think he's headed in the right direction or putting the world at risk? You can call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We continue our conversation with historian Jeremy Suri from the University of Texas, Austin. He says President Trump's foreign policy moves are taking the world back to the dangerous era of the 1930s.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of what you've seen from President Trump and his administration when it comes to foreign policy? Are you worried that he's making the world a more dangerous place, or do you see him making good calls in the interest of the United States? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Jeremy, Donald Trump as a candidate had talked about restricting immigration and refugees, a Muslim ban at some points, and we have these executive orders restricting immigration from 7 Muslim-majority countries, limits on refugees, postponement of refugees. What do you make of that when it comes to the message it sends countries around the world?
Well, I think it's part of this 1930s-style move of trying to build walls and closing ourselves off to what we see as dangerous currents in the world. I think that when the president talks about carnage, he's talking about carnage abroad as well as at home. And the message it sends to the world is not just a message of non-cooperation. I think it's a message of hostility because we are so deeply connected to the business and education and daily interaction to people in so many other parts of the world that closing ourselves off to them is a hostile act. It's not just an act of non-cooperation. And I think that looks aggressive to people overseas, even our friends.
I want to focus in on the impact on Iraq for just a moment. There's been reaction there. People who have fought in some ways on our behalf against ISIS, worried that they can't come over to the U.S. And then there's this from a speech to the intelligence community officials after Donald Trump was inaugurated. Here's a listen.
Do you remember I always used to say, keep the oil? I wasn't a fan of Iraq. I didn't want to go into Iraq. But I will tell you, when we were in, we got out wrong. And I always said, in addition to that, keep the oil. Now, I said it for economic reasons. But if you think about it, Mike, if we kept the oil, you probably wouldn't have ISIS because that's where they made their money in the first place. So we should have kept the oil. But okay. Maybe you'll have another chance. But the fact is, should have kept the oil.
So we should have kept the oil from oil fields in Iraq. What do you worry about what Iraqis will hear from that?
Well, this is a hard one for me to comment on, Rob, because it's just such a stupid statement all the way through, and I don't say that lightly, but it is a stupid statement. First of all, we don't have a shortage of oil right now. Keeping the oil is not something we need to do. Secondly, if we were going to keep the oil, we would have been fighting much harder. He blames us for getting involved in the war that he himself supported, but if we were trying to keep that oil, we would have had to send far more soldiers over there. it's not that easy. You can't just say, the oil is mine. We've seen how hard it is to control these areas. And then third, your point, Rob, if we're trying to get people to cooperate with us and we're stealing their stuff, it's pretty hard to build cooperation. So that kind of statement is so damaging because it distorts everything that was going on. There is nothing correct in that statement. There is nothing absolutely even close to intelligent in that. And it just takes us off in the wrong direction, harming ourselves and harming everyone.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Linda is with us in Holcomb. Linda, hi.
Hi. I have a question in regards to the ban of last weekend. My understanding is that these people who have already been vetted for 18 months to 24 months, I'm wondering what President Trump is doing further. to vet these people? I mean, is anything being done?
Linda, thanks for that call.
They've already been...
Yeah, talking about refugees in particular being vetted for 18 to 24 months, Jeremy.
So, as I understand it, they hadn't figured that out yet. But I think what's happened so far is that those who had been vetted for 18 to 24 months, if they were from one of the seven countries where they were prohibited entry, they couldn't come in. And if they were deemed a refugee, they couldn't come in because of the halt to all refugees from all places. Now, after the court order on Friday night, I believe refugees are now coming in, those that have been vetted. We've gone back with the court order to where we were before the executive order was issued. What will happen if the executive order is reinstated by the courts? I don't know. What I've been told, Linda, is that people in Homeland Security didn't know what they were doing either. There was no planning for this. So they're kind of making it up as they go along.
Linda, thanks for the call. Chris joins us next in Columbus. Chris, hi.
Hey, I got to say, I was not a fan of Trump during the election, but the actions that he's taken, you know, broad policy-wise, I mean, implementation could be better, are spot on and what we needed. I think that we needed to address things from a, you know, what is best for our country, and that was not done previously.
Chris, thanks for the call. And Jeremy, that's the case the president is making. We need to have America first and foremost in our minds in foreign policy.
So I appreciate Chris's point, and I think there have been many things prior Democratic and Republican administrations did that did not serve the best interests of our country, and that would include some of the policies of President Obama. So I'm all on board with that. But I think the way we have to talk about this is by first having a real discussion about what our interests are. And our interests are not in putting a wall on the Mexican border. That hurts all of us. Our interests are not in putting a 20% tariff on everything we buy from Mexico. That's just a tax for all of us. Our interests are not in antagonizing our allies. Our interests are not in allowing Vladimir Putin to continue genocidal behavior in Syria and to move in and take over Ukraine and then move into the Baltics and other places. Our interests are not in a war between China and Japan or China and Taiwan. So I'm all for putting ourselves first. But I think we have to be clear about what our interests are. I fear, and I wrote this in the piece you quoted, Rob, that we're not actually pursuing our interests. We're pursuing our enemies. Those are two different things. Trump is lashing out at people he doesn't like, and that's different from pursuing your interests. You get into a lot of trouble, Democrat or Republican, when you want to fight your enemies rather than protecting your interests.
Chris, thanks for the call. We're going to ask to Jerry calling from Iowa. Jerry, hi.
Hi.
What do you think, Jerry?
Talking to you today. I think on Trump's foreign policies, he's doing a great job. We've lost a lot of respect over the years, and I think it's time we get some of that back. They've kind of run over us the last 8 years, and we kind of need to get some of that respect back and get our jobs back. And for the refugees, the articles that I read, there's only a few that aren't making it across, and they're the what I would call the iffy ones. And everybody else has been able to come through. It's not as big a deal as what everybody's making of it, is what I've read.
All right, Jerry, thanks for the call. So his main point there initially, Jeremy, Donald Trump will get more respect for the United States with Jerry feels we've lost.
So I appreciate Jerry's points, and I 100% agree with Jerry that respect and credibility matter. We have benefited for the last 50 to 70 years from the fact that, especially when our enemy was the Soviet Union, most people would prefer to have worked with us. And I think that's still true with regard to the United States and our rivalry with China in certain areas. They prefer us. They find us more credible, more trustworthy, more respected. And there were things that the Obama administration did that probably diminished the respect of the United States around the world. So I agree with Jerry on that as well. Where I disagree with Jerry is I think, and I'm certain, in fact, that the things President Trump has done so far have greatly diminished the respect of the United States around the world. And I will tell you that already we're seeing a decline in the number of talented people who want to come to the United States. Now, on the refugee issue, there are lots and lots of refugees who, under the executive order, if it's reinstated, whether they're iffy or not, in Jerry's terms, will not be allowed in the United States. My father was a refugee. Many of us have parents who were refugees. We wouldn't be here if we had an order like the order President Trump has initiated. That's not how you rebuild respect in the world.
Thanks for the call, Jerry. We're talking to Jeremy Suri, historian at the University of Texas Austin, looking at Donald Trump's foreign policy. As far as just the day-to-day diplomatic relations, and we've seen a tiff with the leader of Mexico, not surprising, the leader of Australia. Do you think that some of these rifts are just early days in the White House, or do you think that there's some deeper significance here?
Oh, I think it's a little bit of both, Rob. I mean, I think their transitions are even under the best of circumstances rough, and people don't know each other. They're feeling each other out. Things could be misinterpreted. So I think we do need to give some leeway there. But I also think you have to value the relationships. And where it's hard for anyone, it doesn't just have to be Donald Trump, but anyone who has not operated in this space before, is it's difficult to understand the relationships and understand where the difficult points, where the sensitive points are. I hope that Secretary of State Tillerson will be helpful here. He has a lot of experience in international business and affairs, and I think that could be helpful. That's not the experience Donald Trump has had, and I think that's been a problem early on, but that could be improved. So I remain hopeful in that area.
Briefly, as we wrap up, Jeremy, worst case if we really do go back to a 1930s international mentality?
Well, I fear, and I think there's a high probability of this, and I don't say this wanting it to happen. I hope I'm wrong, but I think there's a high probability we will be at war in the next year to year and a half, not nuclear war, but a big war, and we will not be happy about that.
We'll leave it there for now. Jeremy, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Jeremy Suri. He's professor of history and public affairs at the University of Texas, Austin. He's co-editor of the book, The Power of the Past, History and Statecraft. We have a link to his article on foreign policy in the Trump administration. You can find that link over on the Central Time Facebook page. And while you're there, you can answer some of the questions we've brought up over the course of this conversation. Do you like or are you worried about the foreign policy course we've seen so far from President Trump and his administration? What do you think about particular issues like relationships with Russia, with Mexico, the wall there, the policies on immigration and refugees, our relationship with and funding of NATO, our alliance there? What are your hopes and your fears for Trump foreign policy in the coming years? Again, head over, read more at the Central Time Facebook page, and then share your thoughts there. And as always, you can tweet us at Central Time WPR, or if you're old-fashioned, send us an email to talk@WPR.org.